Good afternoon and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Kristen Malavenda, and my guest this week is Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. The program's a little different this week in that it's being pre-recorded due to the Christmas holiday, so we won't be able to take your questions right now. But if things do occur to you while you're listening, go ahead and email those questions to us at ask@WBAA.org or tweet them to @WBAA News on Twitter, and we'll get to those questions when we talk to Mayor Barton next month here on Ask the Mayor. Well, Mayor Barton, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Let's get right into our first topic for today. Crawfordsville, like Frankfort and also like West Lafayette and Lafayette, has been making an effort to raise some blighted properties lately. Can you talk to me a little bit about that effort and maybe why now is the right time to do those things?
Right. That's been very high on our agenda for quite a while now, for about 3 years. For us anyway, I viewed it as kind of a cancer eating away at the community that we had to address. And we kind of drew the line and we started with our main corridors and said, you know, people are traveling through our community. This is the impression they're getting and this isn't right. So we went after those properties in the main corridors and then we worked our way out from there. And now we're to the point where we're really tackling those big, difficult properties to deal with, such as an abandoned hospital, a five-story building in our downtown. We addressed an abandoned factory earlier this year. So really going after those things. And as far as the timing, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about other communities, but for me, I just felt like we were long overdue and we had to really go at the root of the problem.
So when you're getting ready to knock down a neglected building, do you already have a plan in place for what might go next in that space, or is the priority just to either renovate it or get it taken down and then worry about that?
Well, each situation is a little different. In some cases, we do have something, you know, in mind down the road. But in a lot of cases, it's just a matter of wanting to get it secured and eliminate the blight or eliminate the threat to the neighborhood. A lot of the properties that we've worked with have been residential. And you really reach a point that you think, you know, if I live next door to this, I would not be happy either. And it's not fair to the homeowners in the neighborhood who are taking care of their property and trying to do a good job to have to live next to something that's falling in, that's full of, you know, danger, that's full of animals and so on. So we really go in with our immediate goal just to get this cleaned up and secured and then kind of go from there. And like I said, each situation is a little different.
Well, Mayor McBarnes from Frankfort was telling us a few weeks ago that there are some places in his city that they plan to make into micro parks, he's calling them. There's even one spot right on the Frankfort Courthouse Square that they're planning on that for.
Right.
Is that an option for something in Crawfordsville?
That is an option that we look at, but you have to kind of step back through the process. And you know, there's a legal process that we follow on these. And just because we are taking, let's say, an old house down doesn't mean that the city ends up with ownership of the property. So, our ability, even at that point, to take ownership and put a park there is really on a case-by-case basis. In many of these cases, on a residential side, we take the structure down, put a lien on the property. Then if the property is ever sold, then obviously the city recovers their money. And we've been successful in doing that for the first time in the last few years. To get the property, we usually need to be in a back tax situation where they've not paid their property taxes for a number of years. And certainly we're looking at some of those properties for the little mini park concept or just to create green space and possibly even community gardens in areas throughout the city.
Do you have any issues throughout Crawfordsville where there are neighborhoods that have a significant number of these types of properties and maybe the whole area needs to be revamped, or is it really a spot-by-spot situation?
Well, it's largely been spot-by-spot. We do have, I think, a neighborhood around the old former Culver Hospital that, you know, and that facility has been empty for 30 years, been empty and falling in, and construction starts in January to clean that up and turn that into an apartment complex. So if you look at the neighborhood around there, there's kind of a focus of some deterioration just because of the situation. So we're probably going to go in and really, you know, take some steps to try to shore that neighborhood up, you know, and give them some help. But this has largely been scattered throughout. It's not that you see big pockets. We did have, a pocket where we started at Washington Street and Chestnut Street in Crawfordsville, which is US 231. And we had three structures there that were focused together that we started with and we took down. And that's now been redeveloped. There's now a gas station convenience store at that corner. So it's mainly spread out, I guess.
Do you hear a lot from residents about, hey, come check out this property? Or even people who say, wow, we've been, you know, looking at that eyesore for years. Thanks so much for doing something about that.
I get a tremendous amount of feedback on this. And we have a full-time code enforcement officer that's always working, taking calls from the public about properties, you know, with which they have a concern. And we just keep a priority list, and we work with the ones with which you can work. And then if it reaches a certain point, then we start down this path of cleaning it up. And we always have that priority list going. And I think the neat thing for me, a couple of things. One is the public is very, very appreciative of our efforts to clean up the community. I mean, this is very well received because people have been frustrated for years. There seems to be this endless run around and nothing gets done. So we've drawn the line in the sand and we go after it and we make it happen. The other really interesting thing in our case, when we went out and started really getting aggressive with this, we were kind of taking a gamble. And I felt like if we went out and we did this a few times, people would get the message. And they would start cleaning up properties and taking them down on their own. And that's what's happened. So for every house or property that we've taken down, there have been easily three done on the private dollar because people simply didn't want us to take them down the path of going through the legal process and putting a lien on their property and everything else. So there have been, you know, all these other houses that have come down that we didn't have to do. We may have started the process. We might have told them we were going to start the process, but they've come along and done it on their own. So that's the, I think the multiplier effect is what's been very powerful for us. People see a lot of houses cleaned up. The city only actually had to do part of those.
And I assume that the goal would be to get to a point where you're really at a stable situation in terms of not many blighted properties, and you're just kind of trying to hold that standard.
Absolutely. And the worst of the worst are gone. You know, the cases we're working now are not quite as severe. I mean, there are still some problem areas that we're working through. We're also seeing a new development that we're actually seeing properties as we start through this process that owners will come back and put together a plan to rehabilitate the property. And, you know, we always look at that. And if they have an acceptable plan and we're comfortable with it, we give them some time to do that because clearly we would like to have some of these older homes renovated rather than just disposed of. So if we think it's workable and they put together a solid plan, we do work with them. And we're working with several property owners right now who are working through that process.
You're listening to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Kristen Malavenda. I'm speaking with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. A reminder that a program is being pre-recorded this week, so you can't send us your questions right now, but if you think of questions for Mayor Barton, we can ask them next month when he's on the program. You can email us at ask@wbaa.org, or you can tweet at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, the Montgomery County Commissioners just had their final meeting of the year. They approved the hiring of an engineering firm for the Courthouse Clock Tower project. Tell me a little bit about that project and how the city's involved.
Right. There was a clock tower on the Montgomery County Courthouse when it was originally constructed. And at some point during World War II, from what I've read, someone thought the tower might have been leaning, and they took it off and of course, had the steel melted down for the war effort. So our courthouse has been without its tower since World War II, and it's not the most attractive thing in the world, I'll say that, made worse in recent years by a weather siren that was put on top of the courthouse. But there's been a private group here in the community for decades trying to raise money to restore the clock tower, and they finally were within the home stretch. The county and the city have come together and said, you know, you're so close, we'll help you push this over the top. Because it is important to our community. And you know, the downtown is the heart of the community. We're really working very hard to, you know, bring our downtown back and really breathe life into it. And that really sets the stage. So that group has moved forward. And, you know, we need an engineer to look at the courthouse and tell us, you know, that it structurally is fit for this tower, and it'll stand the wind load and all those kinds of things. So that was signed yesterday. The city and the county are cooperating with that private group who's been fundraising to make this a reality, and we hope we see it happen next year.
Is the design for the tower already done, and is it historical? Does it represent what it used to look like?
It is done. The design is done, and it's historical, but it is not 100% accurate to what the original looked like, simply because the building has changed in that time as well. So some of the decorative work that was on the original tower would not match the courthouse today. But that's all been vetted through the historical process to make sure it's as accurate as it needs to be and really fits the courthouse as it looks today. So pretty accurate, but not 100%. And the biggest difference that nobody will notice, it's constructed off-site in three pieces, and it's made of, modern materials. So you're not dealing with the issues you were, many, many years ago.
What does that tower represent to you or to the city? Is it a marker of what the city stands for? Are you looking to it to be kind of a landmark for residents?
Well, we're incorporating this into our bicentennial approach, the state's bicentennial coming up, because I think it's a good look back at our history. That was a proud time in our history. You can look at the photographs and read the accounts of the things that happened in our downtown. So we're looking back to that, but at the same time, I think we're sending a clear message that Crawfordsville and Montgomery County is back, and we're doing well, and we're moving forward. And we're really focused on the downtown, like I said, in the next few years. A lot of things going on, with the Ben-Hur building and the old hospital. We're starting a planning grant for our downtown, and just doing a lot of things to improve the quality of life. And what I hear from the public is, they want that downtown to be nice. They want the quality of life there. They want opportunities. And that's what we're going after.
You mentioned the Ben-Hur building. That's another thing commissioners did this week. They moved that project forward a bit. Remind the listeners about the Ben-Hur building project and tell us where you are in that process of renovating that.
Right. That five-story building has been vacant for over 20 years now. And, it's still in remarkable shape on the inside. There's been some problems with the exterior, with the terracotta. But we have worked, when I came into office, I set out to try to make something happen there. And in all honesty, met probably more than 20 different developers in that time, and trying to find the right fit, someone with the experience, the knowledge, the background, the financial plan to make it work. And we finally put together a team that we're very comfortable with. So what we've done is move on the side. The reason the county is involved, because the current owner had not paid taxes at all on the property since they had owned it. And so we moved on the side of taking control of the property because of the back tax situation. And that process takes a little while, but we've moved through that, and now the county has handed it off to a new developer, a group from West Virginia, with extensive experience and background in these kinds of projects. And they're going to move forward with it from here. So that took place yesterday. There will be probably a signing in the next week or two to actually move that deed over. And you should see some exterior work on that building in the spring when the weather breaks. And they'll be going through the process of applying for tax credits and things like that to move the project forward. But we're really excited about the project.
What kind of timeline is it for that project?
Well, when you see the exterior work happening this spring, it'll be largely driven after that by the tax credit process. And unlike the old hospital, that's an open-ended process. They're going for historic tax credits. So it's really hard to pin down, but I would think, a couple of years to play that out probably is pretty accurate. These things don't move at lightning speed, of course, but there is an incentive there to get in and get it done and make it happen.
The city of Crawfordsville and Union Township, they have a five-year agreement now for the city to provide fire and emergency medical service coverage to the township. You're already providing those services, correct? So what's the difference between this agreement and maybe how you were operating before?
Well, the old agreement, I felt like, was based on an arbitrary number. How do you calculate the value of those services? And so you constantly were dealing with a situation in which the township felt like they were maybe paying too much. You were faced with, city council people and city residents saying, I'm not sure the township's paying enough. So we worked really hard to create a formula to calculate the value of those services. And what we came up with was really looking at the workload of the Crawfordsville Fire Department. And we knew statistically, and we looked over a four-year period, that the township was 17% of the workload of the Crawfordsville Fire Department. Now, that's fire and emergency medical services. So it really came to reason that they should contribute at a level about 17% of the operating budget of that department. And what we found was, under the old agreement, they were contributing at a rate about 6 to 7% of that operating budget. So we worked with them to create a five-year plan to get their contribution up to that 17% mark. And, you know, a lot of variables in there. You know, there's a cash payment. There's credit for equipment that the township purchases for fire protection. And then there, we also gave them credit for revenue that's produced out in the township for emergency medical response. So put all those things together, and we put together a five-year plan. But I think it's a major step forward, and I'm proud of the arrangement here because it's been in place for decades, and it was really ahead of its time when they did it many years ago. You'll see many communities that will have a city fire department and a township fire department and maybe a separate emergency medical services. All three of those are combined in our community, which is highly, highly efficient, and they do a great job. So we just want to make sure everybody's paying proportionate to their use.
Mayor Barton, you mentioned earlier the CFF planning grant the city's applying for. It's through the Indiana Office of Community and Rural Affairs, and I guess you're using it to assess the downtown area and develop some type of master plan. What exactly are you hoping for from that process?
Absolutely. You know, many of these planning grants, you go through the process and they come back with a nice plan, but you really don't have the money to carry it out, or the projects aren't coming to fruition. But I felt like this was a different case because, again, if you look at the old hospital, you look at the Ben Hur building, we just did a bike pedestrian master plan. We're talking about extending our trails into the downtown. The power plant was just sold to private investment, and there's a lot of work going on there. So all of these things are going on in and around the downtown. And I felt it was important that we pull this all together and make sure it's all cohesive, to make sure we tie all these projects together so that it doesn't come out haphazardly in the end. We also have, through the power plant deal, we created a TIF district for that power plant. So as investment occurs in that power plant, we're going to have some TIF revenue there to work on infrastructure and improving things in our downtown from that. So I want to make sure that we have a well-thought-out, cohesive plan together as this starts to unfold.
And what does the Crawfordsville downtown of your dreams look like? You know, when you develop this master plan and you've got it going the way you want, what does that look like to you?
Well, what it looks like to me, and I guess we'll have to see what other people, you know, think as well. And the planning grant, one thing I like about it really incorporates the public's view. So there are plenty of meetings in which they can come in and talk about the things that they want or don't want, and that's the beauty of it. So, you know, I guess what I have in mind right now is we just want to create a downtown that's very inviting, very pleasing. I'm the first to say we're not going to go back to the downtown of the 1950s. That's not realistic. But if you look at what people want today, they want that downtown feel. They want to come downtown and have some specialty shops. They want to have nice restaurants. They want to have some entertainment options. They want it to be walkable. They want to have that sense of place. And we've been working hard to create that. You know, with the farmers market on Saturday mornings in our downtown has been enormously successful. And I think a lot of people go there and they maybe don't even necessarily buy anything. They're just there that sense of place because everyone else is there and it's a place to gather and talk and visit and see other people. So we think we can create that in our downtown really year round. We already have some great stuff downtown and we just want to add to it. So, you know, as you clean it up with the clock tower and the work that's going to happen around the courthouse parking lot and all these other projects going on, I think it'll have a nice feel.
You know, at Purdue, they're always talking about peer institutions, you know, people that they measure themselves against or people that they have aspirational institutions that they'd like to be like. Does Crawfordsville have any specific communities that you measure yourself against or you want to be more like?
Well, not in this sense. We look around quite a bit, and I'm a big proponent of looking at what other communities are doing and, you know, don't try to reinvent the wheel. We can't really exactly copy anyone, but we can certainly find some best practices and some things that are working elsewhere. So I wouldn't say that there's a community out there that we, you know, we want to emulate and be just like. But for me, it's I look to the communities that are successful in keeping the younger generation in their community and successful in attracting people to come and live and work in their community. And that's what I want to go after. We really struggle, and I've mentioned this several times, but we struggle with the fact that our population is very stable until about age 22, and then it plummets until the mid-30s. And we have to find ways to keep those young people in our communities, or in our community, working in our community, you know, starting families here, buying homes here, doing the things that they would be doing to stimulate that growth and investment in our community. So I want a community in which people want to live.
Well, speaking of community, you've got a lot of people around this time of year, the holidays, Hanukkah and Christmas, who are struggling, whether it be to pay bills or to provide gifts for their families or just to be comfortable. Does the city do anything to ensure that those less fortunate residents have a more comfortable holiday season?
Well, I think each of our departments addresses that in a unique way. You know, and we're very blessed in this community to have a very strong support network. Our church organizations do a fantastic job. All of the service groups, everybody kind of comes together, and we have a kind of a unified effort now. You know, there's Project Reindeer and some things like that kind of pulls everyone together. So we think we have a very strong support system in place. We are constantly on the city side looking for people that we think maybe are falling through the cracks in that support network. That maybe need some extra assistance, and we take steps to try to fit them in where we can try to fit them in. So it's mainly just an awareness on our level and trying to direct them to the appropriate place. But certainly, you know, the police through the FOP have been very engaged, and the firefighters through the fire union have been very engaged, and all of our departments really are kind of on heightened alert for this.
You know, we've been pretty lucky weather-wise so far this winter. I'm knocking on wood as I say
Absolutely.
That. But, you know, who knows what's to come. Do you have any concerns either with the roads or anything else? Were we to get some more severe winter weather, and how has Crawfordsville prepared for that potential this year?
I think we're very well prepared. I mean, obviously last year was tough, and at this point last year we'd already been dealing with snow removal. So we've already gotten a break this year, but you know, our supplies of salt and abrasives and things like that are good. We've tweaked our program this year a little bit. We're doing some of the pre-treating that we hadn't done in the past. And the one measurable snowfall that we've had this year, which really wasn't much, but that really did show some promising results. So we're always looking at that. The street commissioner does a fantastic job, and our crews do a great job. And I heard so much positive feedback in this community last year in light of, you know, the situation that they were faced with about the snow removal efforts and the efforts they put forth on our streets. So I know they're well prepared. I know they're ready to go, and supplies are ready. So we'll just knock on wood, and hopefully we have an easy winter.
And then, of course, we're heading into the new year, and we'll have a new session of the Indiana General Assembly starting. What will Crawfordsville be looking to the General Assembly for this year? Do you have anything that's just like right on the top of the list? As soon as legislators meet, you need to get in there and talk to them about it.
Well, we've talked to them already about a couple of things. You know, one, the there's some legislation out there to address, you know, municipalities and municipal utilities and their ability to expand when you annex areas. We're concerned with some of those proposed changes. And then there's always proposed changes to, you know, redevelopment commissions and TIF districts and those kinds of things. So we feel like we really have to stay on top of that, of those issues as well. And I've not even seen all the proposed legislation that's out there. But we'll start diving into that along with our, you know, our colleagues in other communities and speak to the legislators as much as we can. But, you know, I can already tell you my overarching message to the state legislature right now is, you know, just give us some time to catch our breath here and keep our houses in order. You know, when they go in and they make wholesale changes every year, it is just utter chaos to local government. And, you know, the legislature has been very aggressive with tax cuts in for many years now. And you need to slow down and give us a chance to really figure this out. I think we're all doing quite well. We're living within our means and balanced budgets and those kind of things. But, you know, just kind of slow down on some of these radical changes for a little bit and let us kind of get things going. You know, if we're the state that works, then let's see that happen.
And how do you personally interact with the legislature? Are you in Indianapolis quite a bit during the session, or do you kind of watch things from afar and have other people lobbying for you? How does that work from your standpoint?
You know, it really depends. It's kind of a variety for me. It depends on, you know, really what's going on and what the issues might happen to be. But, I have made trips over. I do work through IACT quite a bit, the Associations of Cities and Towns, Indiana Municipal Power Association, you know, some of those groups, depending on the issue. I've made trips over to meet with, you know, staff from, you know, the governor's office, lieutenant governor's office. And then I'm very fortunate here that our legislators here locally are very accessible. So, you know, I do have a concern. You know, I'm able to reach out to them and you know, I voice my concern and how I feel, and it kind of goes from there. So not saying that they're always going to agree with me, but I do have that ability to reach out to them, and then they are very accessible. So that works out very, very well. And I try to be very careful with that. I don't approach them about every, you know, minor issue that's out there. They know when they hear from me that it's something that I really believe in.
And as far as your residents go, I'm sure they have concerns that they'd like to be expressed to the legislature every time they're in session. What opportunities do your citizens have to let you know what those issues are and what things they're concerned about?
One thing I do that's really different here is I have a monthly meeting with the public, and I call it my community forum. And I do that every month. I've done it every month since I've taken office. And I rotate it around the community to different places at different times, try to catch, you know, different people on their schedules. And anyone can come and ask me anything they want to ask, bring any question, concern. You know, a lot of times people bring suggestions. I've gotten some good suggestion out of those. So I do that every month, and it's published in the newspapers and social media. And I think that gives people that ability to come in and just, you know, really tell me what they think or how they feel. And it's been very, very successful. The first year, you know, I had a lot of people, and now it's not quite as many people coming. And it runs in cycles. But I feel like, you know, people have had a chance to express themselves, and they know. I have people come up to me who've never come to one of those but thank me for it. It's just that they know that the opportunity is there if they want to use it. So I have an open door.
Great. Well, that does it for another broadcast of Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Thanks so much for your time today, and happy holidays, Mayor Barton.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Well, we're off now for 2 weeks, and we'll return Thursday, January 8th, when our guest will be West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. Anytime you think of questions for any of our mayors, you can email them to ask@wbaa.org or tweet them to @WBAA News on Twitter. Thanks for joining me today for Ask the Mayor. I'm Kristen Malavenda.